We're continuing Chapter 15 of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. They just wandered back to the common room or something like that, and Hermione had warned Harry about the ladies. "Hi, Harry," said Romilda Vane the moment he had climbed through the portrait hole. "Fancy a gillywater?" Hermione gave him a what-did-I-tell-you look over her shoulder. "No thanks," Harry said quickly. "I don't like it much." "We'll take these anyways," said Romilda, thrusting a box into his hand. "Chocolate cauldrons. They've got fire whiskey in them. My grand sent them to me, but I don't like them." "Oh, right. Thanks a lot," said Harry, who could not think of anything else to say. "I'm just going over here with..." He hurried off behind Hermione, his voice tailing away feebly. "Told you," said Hermione succinctly. "Sooner you ask someone, sooner they'll all leave you alone, and you can..." Her face suddenly turned blank. She had just spotted Ron and Lavender, who were entwined in the same armchair. "Well, good night, Harry," said Hermione, though it was only 7 o'clock in the evening, and she left for the girls' dormitory without another word. Harry went to bed, comforting himself that there was only one more day of lessons to struggle through, plus Slughorn's party, after which he and Ron would depart together for the Burrow. It now seemed impossible that Ron and Hermione would make up with each other before the holidays began, but perhaps somehow the break would give them time to calm down, think better of their behavior. But his hopes were not high, and they sank still lower after enduring a transfiguration lesson with them both next day. They had just embarked upon the immensely difficult task of human transfiguration, working in front of mirrors. They were supposed to be changing the colors of their own eyebrows. Hermione laughed unkindly at Ron's disastrous first attempt, during which he somehow managed to give himself a spectacular handlebar mustache. But Ron retaliated by doing a cruel but accurate impression of Hermione jumping up and down in her seat every time Professor McGonagall asked a question, which Lavender and Parvati found deeply amusing, and which reduced Hermione to the verge of tears again. She raced out of the classroom on the bell, leaving half her things behind. Harry, deciding her need was greater than Ron's just now, scooped up her remaining possessions and followed her. He finally tracked her down as she emerged from a girl's bathroom on the floor below. She was accompanied by Luna Lovegood, who was patting her vaguely on the back.
I just have to say that J.K. Rowling has come out as saying that she made a mistake putting Ron and Hermione, and this is the exact opening when she could have changed the stakes and paired Harry and she together.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. It is weird, though, that, I mean, she clearly had designed Hermione and Ron to be together from the very beginning, or from pretty early on. So it would have changed a lot of stuff, you know. But you're right. She could have done it here. "Oh, hello, Harry," said Luna. "Did you know one of your eyebrows is bright yellow?" "Hi, Luna." "Hermione, you left your stuff," yelled at her books. "Oh, yes," said Hermione in a choked voice, taking her things and turning away quickly to hide the fact that she was wiping her eyes on her pencil case. "Thank you, Harry. Well, I'd better get going." And she hurried off without giving Harry any time to offer words of comfort, though admittedly he could not think of any. "She's a bit upset," said Luna. "I thought at first it was Moaning Myrtle in there, but it turned out to be Hermione. She said something about that Ron Weasley. "Yeah, they've had a row," said Harry. "He says very funny things sometimes, doesn't he?" said Luna, as they set off down the corridors together. "But he can be a bit unkind, I noticed last year." "I suppose," said Harry. Luna was demonstrating her usual knack for speaking uncomfortable truths. He had never met anyone quite like her. "So have you had a good term?" he asked. "Oh, it's been all right," said Luna. "A bit lonely without the D.A. Ginny's been nice, though. She stopped two boys in our transfiguration class calling me Loony the other day." "How would you like to come with me to Slughorn's party tonight?" The words were out of Harry's mouth before he could stop them. He heard himself say them as though it were a stranger speaking. Luna turned her protuberant eyes upon him in surprise. "Slughorn's party with you?" "Yeah," said Harry. "We're supposed to bring guests, so I thought you might like... I mean... He was keen to make his intentions perfectly clear. I mean, just as friends, you know. But if you don't want to... He was already half hoping she didn't want to. Oh, no, I'd love to go with you as friends, said Luna, beaming as he had never seen her beam before. Nobody's ever asked me to a party before as a friend. Is that why you dyed your eyebrow for the party? Should I do mine, too? No, said Harry firmly. That was a mistake. I'll go get Hermione to put it right for me. So I'll meet you in the entrance hall at 8 o'clock, then? Aha, screamed a voice from overhead, and both of them jumped, unnoticed by either of them. They had passed right underneath Peeves, who was hanging upside down from a chandelier and grinning maliciously at them. Potty asked Loony to go to the party. Potty loves Loony. Potty loves Loony. And he zoomed away, cackling and shrieking. Potty loves Loony. Nice to keep these things private, said Harry. And sure enough, in no time at all, the whole school seemed to know that Harry Potter was taking Luna Lovegood to Slughorn's party. You could have taken anyone, said Ron in disbelief over dinner. Anyone, and you chose Luna Lovegood? Don't call her that, Ron, snapped Ginny, pausing behind Harry on her way to join friends. I'm really glad you're taking her, Harry. She's so excited. And she moved on down the table to sit with Dean. Harry tried to feel pleased that Ginny was glad he was taking Luna to the party, but could not quite manage it. A long way along the table, Hermione was sitting alone, playing with her stew. Harry noticed Ron looking at her furtively. You could say you're sorry, suggested Harry bluntly. What, and get attacked by another flock of canaries? Muttered Ron. What did you have to imitate her for? She laughed at my mustache. So did I. It was the stupidest thing I'd ever seen. But Ron did not seem to have heard. Lavender had just arrived with Parvati. Squeezing herself in between Harry and Ron, Lavender flung her arms around Harry's neck. Hi, Harry, said Parvati, who, like him, looked faintly embarrassed and bored by the behavior of their two friends. Hi, said Harry. How are you? You're staying at Hogwarts, then. I heard your parents wanted you to leave. I managed to talk them out of it for the time being, said Parvati. That Katie thing really freaked them out. But as there hasn't been anything since... Oh, hi, Hermione. Parvati positively beamed. Harry could tell she was feeling guilty for having laughed at Hermione in Transfiguration. He looked around and saw Hermione was beaming back, if possible, even more brightly. Girls were very strange sometimes. Hi, Parvati, said Hermione, ignoring Ron and Lavender completely. Are you going to Slughorn's party tonight? No invite, said Parvati gloomily. I'd love to go. It sounds like it's going to be really good. You're going, aren't you? Yes, I'm meeting Cormac at 8, and we're... There was a noise like a plunger being withdrawn from a blocked sink, and Ron surfaced. Hermione acted as though she hadn't seen or heard anything. We're going to the party together. Cormac, said Parvati. Cormac McLagan, you mean? That's right, said Hermione sweetly. The one who almost, she put a great deal of emphasis on the word, became Gryffindor Keeper. Are you going out with him, then? Asked Parvati, wide-eyed. Oh, yes, didn't you know? Said Hermione with the most un-Hermione-ish giggle. No, said Parvati, looking positively agog at this piece of gossip. Well, you like your Quidditch players, don't you? First Crumb, then McLagan. I like really good Quidditch players, Hermione corrected her, still smiling. Well, see you. Got to go and get ready for the party. And she left. At once, Lavender and Parvati put their heads together to discuss this new development, with everything they had heard about McLagan and all they had ever guessed about Hermione. Ron looked strangely blank and said nothing. Harry was left to ponder in silence the depths to which girls would go to get revenge. When he arrived in the entrance hall at 8 o'clock that night, he found an unusually large number of girls lurking there, all of whom seemed to be staring at him resentfully as he approached Luna. She was wearing a set of spangled silver robes that were attracting a certain amount of giggles from the onlookers, but otherwise she looked quite nice. Harry was glad in any case that she had left off her radish earrings, her butterbeer cork necklace, and her specter specs. Hi, he said. Shall we get going, then? Oh, yes, she said happily. Where's the party? Slughorn's office, said Harry, leading her up the marble staircase away from all the staring and muttering. Did you hear? There's supposed to be a vampire coming. Rufus Scrimgeour? Asked Luna. What? Said Harry, disconcerted. You mean the Minister of Magic? Yes, he's a vampire, said Luna matter-of-factly. Father wrote a very long article about it when Scrimjaw first took over from Cornelius Fudge, but he was forced not to publish it by someone from the Ministry. Obviously, they didn't want the truth to get out. Harry, who thought it most unlikely that Rufus Scrimjaw was a vampire, but who was used to Luna repeating her father's bizarre views as to their effect, did not reply. They were already approaching Slughorn's office, and the sounds of laughter, music, and loud conversation were growing with every step they took. Whether it had been built that way, or because he had used magical trickery to make it so, Slughorn's office was much larger than the usual teacher's study. The ceiling and walls had been draped with emerald, crimson, and gold hangings, so that it looked as though they were all inside a vast tent. The room was crowded and stuffy, and bathed in a red light cast by an ornate golden lamp dangling from the center of the ceiling, in which real fairies were fluttering, each with a brilliant speck of light. Loud singing, accompanied by what sounded like mandolins, issued from a distant corner. A haze of pipe smoke hung over the several elderly warlocks deep in conversation, and a number of house elves were negotiating their way squeakily through the forest of knees, obscured by the heavy silver platters of food they were bearing, so that they looked like little roving tables. "Harry, my boy," boomed Slughorn, almost as soon as Harry and Luna had squeezed in through the door. "Come in, come in. So many people I'd like you to meet." Slughorn was wearing a tasseled velvet hat to match his smoking jacket. Gripping Harry's arm so tightly he might have hoped to disapparate with him, Slughorn led him purposefully into the party. Harry seized Luna's hand and dragged her along with him. "Harry, I'd like you to meet Eldred Warple, an old student of mine, author of Blood Brothers, My Life Among the Vampires, and of course his friend Sanguini." Warple, who was a small, stout, bespeckled man, grabbed Harry's hand and shook it enthusiastically. The vampire Sanguini, who was tall and emaciated, with dark shadows under his eyes, merely nodded. He looked rather bored. A gaggle of girls was standing close to him, looking curious and excited. "Harry Potter, I'm simply delighted," said Warple, peering short-sightedly up into Harry's face. "I was saying to Professor Slughorn only the other day, where is the biography of Harry Potter for which we have all been waiting?" Said Harry. "Were you?" "Just as modest as horse described," said Warple. "But seriously," his manner changed. It had become suddenly businesslike. "I would be delighted to write it myself. People are craving to know more about you, my dear boy. Craving. If you were prepared to grant me a few interviews, say in 4 and 5 hour sessions, why, we could have the book finished within months. And all with very little effort on your part, I quite assure you. Ask Sanguini here if it isn't quite..." "Sanguini, stay here," added Warple, suddenly stern, for the vampire had been edging toward the nearby group of girls, a rather hungry look in his eye. "Here, have a pastry," said Warple, seizing one from the passing elf and stuffing it into Sanguini's hand before turning his attention back to Harry. "My dear boy, the gold you can make, you have no idea." "I'm definitely not interested," said Harry firmly, "and I've just seen a friend of mine. Sorry." He pulled Luna after him into the crowd. He had indeed seen a long mane of brown hair disappear between what looked like two members of the Weird Sisters. "Hermione! Hermione!" "Harry, there you are, thank goodness. Hi, Luna." "What happened to you?" said Harry, for Hermione looked distinctly disheveled, rather as though she had just fought her way out of a thicket of devil's snare. "Oh, I've just escaped. I mean, I've just left Cormac," she said. "Under the mistletoe," she added in explanation, as Harry continued to look questioningly at her. "Serves you right for coming with him," he told her severely. "I thought he'd annoy Ron most," said Hermione dispassionately. "I debated for a while about Zacharias Smith, but I thought on the whole..." "You considered Smith?" said Harry, revolted. "Yes, I did, and I'm starting to wish I'd chosen him. McLaggen makes Grop look like a gentleman. Let's go this way. We'll be able to see him coming. He's so tall." The three of them made their way over to the other side of the room, scooping up goblets of mead along the way, realizing too late that Professor Trelawney was standing there alone. And I think we'll stop there. I hope you like that, my baby kitten. You're the sweetest girl ever. I love you so much. Sweet dreams, darling.